Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today, again, our guests are Mike Cantu and Tony Alvarez, some of the most popular buyers and now trainers in the California. Welcome back.
Hi, Bruce.
Mike, I've got a question for you. You have an interesting habit when you buy a property. You give it a job title. I've always found that an interesting thing, and I've actually done it ever since. So how did that come up, and do properties ever get new job titles?
Yeah, yes, they do, Bruce. And it started, I didn't start giving stuff job titles until I realized that once I've got them paid off, that we have this set of recurring expenses in life. That 30-day cycle of life comes around every 30 days, surprising regularity. But that's what most people battle. They get on that treadmill of life, and they go to work 5 days a week, hoping to bring home enough to support themselves for 7 days. And I realized that if I could get the recurring expenses taken care of, then I had my financial world by the tail. So as I started getting houses paid off, removing the debt, I would give them a very specific job description. The insurance house covers my daughter's car insurance, my insurance. We have a medical insurance house, a food house, a gas house. Anything that recurring expense, we have a house for it. And then I realized that that was also, it didn't just apply to the free and clear houses. So as I continued to buy houses, everything got a written job description. Some of them were to grow up in value, pay down the debt, harvest the equity to apply towards something else paying off. I've gone as far as writing job descriptions on post-it notes, leave my life ASAP. That would be a nasty house that I was looking for a wholesale check on. So I just, they need to know what they're there for.
What's interesting about and why it's kind of fun to have you both together is that both very accomplished, but both different methodologies. So We have a boom cycle where prices escalate in 05-06, and you don't sell intentionally and are still very happy with that decision because of what you've just said.
Yes.
That monthly nut is forever solved in multiples. And that was the assignment for that package of properties.
Bruce, that has been my mission from the day I got into real estate. All I ever wanted was enough quality, passive income so that I could live life on my terms, not have to answer to somebody, never been afraid of work. But I just have a challenge being told what to do, especially spending my life working towards someone else's goals.
Have you seen people that have gotten there that have then we became too aggressive and forgot that was the original plan and then had it all?
Oh, yes, Bruce. I've seen that one happen several times, and I do have something in writing. I heard from my mentor, Jack Miller. He says, a wise man once said, once you've got it made, there's no reason to take any more chances. And with that philosophy, I'm a firm believer. Take stuff off the table as you move forward in life, and don't jeopardize yesterday's success by tomorrow's late-night wild ideas. Everything going into the future has got to stand on its own, because at this point in the game, my number one priority is protecting myself from myself. I can make a mess out of things real quick, so as long as the past is off limits, leave it alone, the future's fair game.
Tony, you remember when you and I met, I happened to speak at the Apartment Association meeting.
Right, yeah.
And honestly, from day one, your pile of properties was ready to go to auction.
Right.
In other words, that was why you had that. That job assignment was to create a pile of dough at some point.
Right.
Okay. And that worked for you.
Yeah, and my thing was to get out, and I was looking for advice from different people and stuff, and that's how you're right. That's how I found you, and you were involved in trying to figure out the markets and what they were doing and stuff, and that's how we became friends. And you gave me very good advice, which made me love you even more because, I had a specific goal when I first got into the market. You know, I came out of bankruptcy and I had gotten into the market, and all I wanted to make was $1 million. I wanted to own 10 houses free and clear and get $10,000 a month. That's all I wasn't looking to set the world on fire. And here I was 10 years later with, really at $10 million. Before taxes, before I had to deal with that, and in shock, what do I do? But I wasn't holding, let's say, most of the inventory I bought was out in the high desert and stuff like that in the Antelope Valley. I wasn't necessarily buying houses that I wanted, and you know that I would run up to the house and hug every day or anything. You know,
if they weren't the A-list.
Yeah, they weren't the A-list. I didn't even think in terms of A, B, and C list until I met Mike.
Yeah,
you know, I met him at one of your events, and he was the one who kind of woke me up. He said, "You know, you gotta take that spreadsheet and break it down into what you want and what you want to get rid of." And I woke up and I said, "Well, in all honesty, everything on this list needs to go." So I sold out at the peak of the market, and I cashed out completely. And
I remember a comment you gave, your question he asked me one day. I mean, honestly, this is like 05, 06, and he says, what month do you think is the peak? I said, Tony, you own too many properties. You'll change the market just dumping your own stuff.
No, but you said you're actually instrumental in getting me to stay a little bit longer.
Yeah, now that was an important concept. Because it was funny, you're ready to sell in a market where I wasn't even ready to build in, and I was charting that for Rosamond,
right,
thinking, oh, you're really early. Because
I was at $7 million, and I was ready to bail. Now, you got to understand, I came from bankruptcy. Took me 7 years to get to that much money. And I was like, my God, this is like, you know, you win the lottery. That's how it was for me. You know, I'm a very frugal guy. I pay myself, the most I've ever paid myself is $1,000 a week. I mean, that's it. And my car is paid off. My stuff, you know, I have no debt. I keep one credit card. It's an American Express. Capital One, who gives a credit card to anyone, actually threw me out. Said, we're not making any money off of you. You need to go to American Express.
One thing you mentioned I think is important is that...
You told me to stay longer.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it. I was having a nervous breakdown. I went to see you to confirm I should sell out. And you said, well, you know, I think you ought to stay just a little bit longer. Your area isn't quite done yet. I actually left depressed. I was like, I want that money now, you know.
What I was impressed with was your... I mean, your spreadsheet, man.
Yeah.
You knew where every nickel was going.
Well, I still have that now.
No, I know you do. No, I know you're very, very cautious and particular about keeping those records. I know you do the same thing. I mean, I know you follow those rentals and you know to a percentage what you're expecting to net at the end of a cycle of a year.
You know, one thing I want to give Mike learned from Mike was, and I learned this from when I heard him speak once. He said, you know, one of the things he does at the end of his deals, and this I incorporated into probably every effort, every decision that we make, is once it's done, he sit back and look at it and go, okay, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? You know, what could have I done differently? I never did that.
Well, you know,
I used to complain about what I did wrong, but I never thought about, you know, well, the next time.
I gave you guys just an article I had read, 10 Traits That Make You Filthy Rich.
Right.
And the one that epitomizes Mike to me is number 6, reflectiveness. I've never known anybody that takes a look at what they've done over the course of a property or a year or, you know, a life as much as he does.
Very cool.
And analyzes how that went and how you improve it. Because if you really do that, you know, that's practicing with intent. You know, sometimes you do something for a year and you don't improve, but it's impossible not to improve if you're that intent about analyzing how that just went.
Well, my little office, when I say my whole office, only two of us there now. Well, there's three now. But that has become a very important part of how we do things. Even in the way that we do offers from week to week, we have a weekly meeting. And so we sit back and go, okay, how did we attack this last week? What could we do different? Now, when you take that... Forget every time you do an escrow, but when you put that into play on a weekly basis, you know, sometimes you think there's nothing left. It's like your brain is bleeding almost. It's like, there's nothing more we can improve. You know, we've done it all. But sure enough, you find something that you say, okay, we can do this differently. We can expand this a different way. And that's what's improved our ability to come up with, you know, getting 7 deals in a week. And for us, that's a lot. You know, I think for the Norris Group, that's like, you know, half a day.
No, that's a lot.
You know, but I was pretty impressed with that. And everybody in the office was also.
You know, I think what I was going to try to bring up is that we all feel that we've reached a certain level of competency, and yet we're all capable of learning from each other.
Right.
And that's, to me, that's a very smart thing to expose yourself to, is being open to learning from people that have reached it maybe a different way, and you keep honing and making it a more refined process. And it's kind of exciting to watch. Mentors that are your favorites, Mike, I know you've probably spent more money on education than anyone I have ever known. And I know it's an ongoing process, but let's go back to like the, I don't know, some of the people that planted the permanent seeds where you're going, okay, this is my model and this is why I like it.
Probably my biggest all-time influence, Bruce, was Jack Miller. Jack passed away a couple of years ago. It was a sad day for me, but I took the afternoon off, and I remember going home to my home library, counted up 46 Jack Miller seminar manuals. There was another dozen manuals that he did classes with other people. I had every booklet he'd ever written, every one of his newsletters, and the man was such an influence that really shaped me. There's been several others. There's John Schaub out of Florida. John still teaches to this day. I tell people anything he's printed, I think I have, and it's worthy of paying for. Peter Fortunato has been a huge influence. And you yourself, Bruce, being from my local market, I remember when I heard you at Jack Fullerton's years ago, I couldn't believe that you were doing that stuff in Riverside. So and your educational materials, classes, you've been a big influence also. There is a very small handful of people that I will learn from. Requirement number one is you've got to still be actively doing this business. There's a lot of real estate hucksters out there that have done a few deals, that have good marketing skills, that sell a bunch of rehashed, packaged, worthless information. It's sad when I see the Homer Simpsons of America being taken advantage of. They have a real estate dream and some guy vacuums their seed money out of their wallet.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the price they pay for that stuff could have gotten them into their first deal.
And now both of you have gotten into the education side of it.
Yeah.
And I know the first time you spoke, that was not a very comfortable event for you.
It was a complete out-of-body experience. I was off to the side watching this guy that looked a lot like me, and my thought was, look at him go. He started talking. Can anybody turn that guy off? And I remember for an extended period of time being off to the side watching a guy that looked just like me go, go, go. Wasn't sure what he was saying, but he sure was talking.
You remember you called me after that.
I did.
And you said, now I know why you do this, because you got a standing ovation.
I thought I was going to need a rope, someone to tie it around my ankle, because we would have had a mic kite stuck to the ceiling.
That is a great experience. And Tony, it is amazing to me that that's the first opportunity to speak was at the event that we had.
Yes.
Because I remember thinking, okay, well, I know more about this guy than he does. I know you're going to hit the park.
And yeah. Right up to the last minute, I was scared. I was not going to do this.
I knew this was going to be the hit. And so that's why I put you at the end, because I thought, oh, God, no one's going to want to follow this.
The only thing that saved me that day, and I have to tell you, that was probably the greatest, and even all the stuff I've done since, that was probably the greatest day I had besides my son being born. That was the best shot, you know.
Wow.
I remember before I even went in, I was earlier in the day, maybe about a half an hour before, and I was getting more nervous and more nervous and more nervous. And then my thoughts would just beat me up, you know. And I asked you, I said, I don't know. I'm not sure about this thing. And you said, well, wait a second. Well, what are you worried about? And I said, I couldn't even get words out, you know. And you said, well, do you plan on lying to anybody out there today? Boo, shook me right up. You know, I was like, no. You go, well, did you do this or not? I said, well, yes. Well, just get out there and tell them what you did. Boom. Sat me right. Like it sat me back in my chair, you know, right into my shoes. And, yeah, and that was a fantastic time. I mean, in the reaction of the crowd was phenomenal. I never expected anything like that. I wasn't sure.
Remember people lining up to hug you?
To hug me, yeah, and
yeah.
Crying. I mean, there was some guys, and I felt uncomfortable. I didn't understand why they were crying, but it was obviously with the intensity that I explained the things I did. But, it was phenomenal. And I've gone on, I mean, I love it. What I did was, I think I did too much of it afterwards and kind of got to the point where it's like, okay, you can only do this.
It does take a little bit of your time. I know.
Time, energy.
Of you guys, first of all, writing a document is no joke.
Especially if you're a high school dropout.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing. And then the residual is you're going to probably have some part of your day talking to people that took something that you gave.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody wants to take you to lunch, and they want you to do the whole seminar over again while you're doing lunch, you know?
Yeah. Mike, your experience with that?
Absolutely, every single day. But I also realize it's part of the big picture, part of giving back, that I had good help early on. Absolutely would not be where I'm at today without the help I received, and I am happy to pass it on as long as people are going to attempt to use what I share with them.
Yeah, one of the things you just mentioned to me is significant is that, you know, you just mentioned Jack Miller's name, and that's, I think that's kind of the goal of most people is to, when they're not here, they've done something that was, that had legs, that had a legacy to it. And education does that. You know, no one's going to care that you bought 50 houses, but someone will care that you taught them how to buy two.
Right.
And that's what the education does. It gives you kind of a permanent piece in maybe somebody's future. And that's an exciting and worthwhile thing.
Yeah, it expands the benefits that you've given to yourself, and it makes it broadens and it makes it deeper for you as well, for sure.
What's interesting is I've watched, I think both of you are more passionate about the actual process of buying homes, because in just talking, you know, to both of you, I realize, you know, if you had the clean slate, like no one's going to bother you in the next 24 hours, both of you nuts would go see 10 houses or something.
Yeah.
You know. And it'd be like, yeah. What would I be doing? I'd probably be reading a report with the yellow marker. But, you know, for me, the house buying business was a vehicle to an end.
Right.
And that's kind of what I wanted to ask you. What is the end goal for you guys?
You know, I'm loving to write and to share stuff in that way. And then I am going to do speaking again, but I'm going to be very selective about how I do it. And I'm considering really doing something on a larger, more national basis than just Southern California. But I'm giving it a lot of thought because the one thing I value more than anything else is my time now. And I think over time, over going through all of this, you know, being in real estate and losing it, making it again, you come out the other end and you realize, you know, that's the only thing I have that I can't judge when I'm going to, my time's going to be up or, so I have to be very specific about where I want to spend it. Even coming here with you today, you're someone that when you call me, Bruce, that you just say, hey, where are you? Whatever. I'm there, you know, because that's how and I owe you a tremendous amount. We didn't finish discussing it, but that $7 million went to $10 million because of your direct advice holding me still not to sell that. I made $1 million for each year that I did not sell my inventory, if anybody can understand that.
By the way, thank goodness, you know, there's pressure when you're on the predicting side. Because somebody just, Mike Novak Smith, you know, the biggest REO agent, and one of the biggest in the country, he happened to just send me an email of an article I wrote in 07. It was just sort of like, you know, this is played out so accurately.
Really?
But you're going, thank goodness, you know, four years ago, you opened your big mouth and you weren't really there yet. And, you know, it's scary when people start, and you're in the same boat now, you're authorities. So if you start saying something, they're going to go run out and go do exactly what you said.
Yeah.
And there's some pressure to that because they don't. Problem is, and this is the one thing that's hard to figure, is the desire that both of you have is intense. In other words, you've had to overcome roadblocks aplenty, and there's going to be those same roadblocks, and that's the missing ingredient. Is in a way, it's kind of take the phone call, run the ad, but how do you go past the getting the fifth no to get the yes at the end of that?
I recently was shared. excuse me. A YouTube video that really hit home. It's probably a 5-minute clip, and it's called Honey Badger Don't Care. And as I watched the honey badger just cruise around, stick his nose into the beehive, get bit 1,000 times, pay no attention to him, then went over and grabbed the cobra as it was biting him and chewed his head off, and just cruises around from place to place. And I realized that that's the attitude you have to have. The honey badger don't care, and you just keep on going.
And you just, and hopefully people don't hate you when you leave, but
you do your best with the people skills along the way. We're not to be out to offend anybody or be rude. You just got to get over that. Most people don't want to approach another person and have conversation. And it's just doing what has to be done. I was shared a good philosophy many years ago. It was do what others won't for 5 years, and you can do what others can't for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And once again, me being the bubbling optimist, I soaked every word of that up and believed it absolutely, and was really quite frustrated when it took me a few more years than 5 years to where I thought, okay, I know I'm in the lower part of that category, but at least I'm in that category.
Yeah, Jim Rohn had taught a seminar, and he talked, you know, I set my set of goals and stuff, and I went there after I had done it, and I showed him, and I just thought I was like the on the slow boat to China type thing. And he finally, when he said to me, he said, yeah, it took me one year longer than the first time I had to do that. And I was like, thank God you said that, you know? Because you feel like, because those early years of progression, and, you know, in a way, we're there right now. We don't have the luxury of a 20% upcycle this year. So we're not going to touch a property and have it go up 150 grand and get bonused. I mean, honestly, the skill to know how to buy something below market is the equities that's going to show up for a while. That's an important skill, because if it doesn't happen, then you're going to have less of a cash flow or less of a margin.
Yeah.
So really what we know how to do is a pretty cool tool for equity and cash flow.
Yeah, no, I have to tell you, I respect Mike a whole lot because I've always felt that Mike does this job a lot better than I do. I mean, what I do really doesn't amount to more than I really love all of it. So it's just a joy to do it. And if I don't like the person I'm talking to, I'm not there for very long. Mike has the ability to transcend that sometimes, and you know he just works his magic thing. You know, I mean, he buys houses over the phone. Still don't know how to do that.
And that was one of the things I was going to bring up, is that you rarely meet people intentionally. You don't really want to. You told me about the last time you did, and that was an interesting experience.
Right, my attitude. Maybe that was a self-perception problem that I had, because I figured, if we meet face to face, it's over before it even started. They take one look at me and game over. And I know that.
But over the phone, you feel completely different.
Oh, absolutely. They have no idea who I am, and it's just a voice coming through. But over the years, now, Bruce, in all fairness, if I have the opportunity to meet with someone face to face, I would rather meet with someone face to face. It was three purchases ago. The lady actually lived 2.5 blocks away from my office, and as soon as she told me that, I asked her what the next half hour of her life looked like, and she said it was wide open, and I said I'd be right over. I grabbed a used gift basket, a wicker basket, ran out in the yard, grabbed a half a dozen of the world's best oranges, threw a couple of grapefruits, lemons, and two avocados in it, showed up at her door with a gift basket, ready to talk business.
Okay, he read my book.
I know, wait a minute. That's a page. No, but that's an icebreaker.
Yeah,
that's important. We only got a couple more minutes. Both of you, best advice for someone who's lost everything starting over, because we've either have been there or we're on the brink of thinking we're going to be there. And that's, you know, we've had to contemplate, wow. So
mine would be, honestly, is at this point, is get over it as fast as you can. And by that, I mean, don't sweat the small stuff. We're not aware of what we can accomplish. We're really not. As you start in this business and you start walking into it and you start meeting other people, you start to realize that there's so many people willing to come to your aid, so to speak, only because they're wanting to do something too for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We all want to get there, you know. Everyone in this room, including the folks that you're probably going to interview next, have been people that have in some way made me better at what I'm doing or helped me accomplish some of my goals along the way. So you just have to start walking into it. And
but the key is to get over with the negative.
Yeah, stop. You got to start.
Forward.
Listen, you can't park two cars in one space. So if you're constantly thinking about what's destroyed you in your mind, what you think is the enemy, nothing else can get in.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, you've got to open your mind up to a completely different direction, and it really takes just a very, very conscious focus and decision. And sometimes you have to walk in a direction where you don't see what's going to occur.
Okay, Mike, what about?
First of all, get over it. You've got to restart the car. I know a lot of people used to be in real estate. They're still sitting in a parked car. You cannot go forward in a parked car. Turn the key over, get that thing running again. I would suggest you review the basics, go back to the fundamentals, then find a money partner, go full on, just get out there and get after it, and don't quit till you get what you came for.
And in some ways we forget how we became successful in the first place was probably even in a worse spot than we would be doing it a second time, because we know so much. We have nothing in the beginning, and we had nothing. We didn't know anything, and we had nothing. So That second time around, if you can get over the mental side, is easier. Time's up. Mike and Tony, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you very much,
Bruce.
Great show.
It's always a pleasure, Bruce.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.